everyone, welcome to the Worship Artistry Podcast. My name is Jason Houtsma, and with me
is Christina Kaslanka.
And I have to tell you, Christina, I'm in a good mood today.
Tell me why.
Like, totally different than normal. Like, you know, normally,
yes,
I'm like a grumpy old man.
Well, actually, sometimes when I'm here first and he walks in through the office doors, he's just a fire hose immediately. And I'm like, I'm not ready for this mentally.
Well, you know, I come in hot, but because I'm excited about what we got going on. But I'm in an especially good mood today because yesterday we did our very first teacher roundtable,
yes,
with our worship artistry members.
Yes.
And, you know, I think for me, I think for the teachers, you know, for all of us here, really, we are serving a massive amount of people that we rarely actually get to see.
Yep.
And so there's something about putting a face to the name. You know, we had one guy that was just like, yeah, you've been helping us out so much. Like, this is great. So we're going to start doing these roundtables. And it actually went really well.
Yes.
Which that was the big question.
Surprisingly.
That was the big question. It was like, because I'll be like, we should do a monthly thing where we do this. And Christina's like, let's do one.
Let's just see how it goes.
Let's see how one goes.
Test it out. Test the waters, if you will.
Yeah. And it went amazing.
Yes.
It went really well. And I think we definitely learned a few things.
We did.
But so I think they're only going to get better. So if you are a Worship Artistry member, you will get to have access to that. And it's great because we actually get to converse. We get to have questions. You know, you can get like really they can go all over the place. We have a lot of different ideas, but it warms my heart to see the people who are working with,
it's
serving.
It's the same feeling as when we come back from conferences,
right,
and talk about, oh, it's so cool to see different people that interact with us and tell us that Worship Artistry has helped them, that they use it in their church, that they've used,
right,
it for years. Like, that's so encouraging to hear. And I think that was the same with this, of just,
right,
actually seeing people that actually exist. They're not just a number. They,
right,
actually exist. And they actually use Worship Artistry. And they're real people from Ireland and from all over the
Ireland,
place.
Ireland, Norway. Like,
yeah,
that was really
so cool. And people that Worship Artistry is benefiting them, which,
yeah,
is such an encouragement to us.
Which,
like,
is amazing.
That's why we do this.
I think one of the highlights for me was, you know, we were talking about how somebody asked the question about how, like, man, I practice this stuff. I show up on Sunday and then the worship leader wants to change it. And,
mm-hmm,
I thought Sydney had just a really good thought about it,
mm-hmm,
about the whole, like, you know, if we're coming in servant hearted, if we're like, he used the thing of like, you know, God loves a cheerful giver.
Mm-hmm.
And as worship musicians, whatever role that we're playing, it's like being a cheerful giver. And,
yeah,
rather than looking at difficulties and things that kind of stand in the way, like obstacles, instead of looking at them as like, oh, now there's this.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we get to go like, okay, this is, how do I, in my cheerful heart, give to this and actually make this something more than what it is? And I think it was that's something a lot of worship musicians struggle,
yeah,
with. I mean, the number one question, well, I practice and then I get there and then the leader changes it. And it's like, okay, but if we can have a real great perspective,
yeah,
on that, it really does shift the way that we serve.
And I think it's also really helpful that all of our teachers, even though Ryan is a keyboard teacher, he's also a worship leader.
And he's a person too. I,
yes,
mean, keyboard players are people too.
He's a person. He's a real boy. But same with Chris. Like, he teaches vocals, but he's also a worship leader.
Right.
And all different environments too. Very different from where you're leading,
right,
and,
right,
what your context looks like, what your team looks like. So it was very cool to see how, even I believe there was a question about tracks, like how do you incorporate tracks, how to use tracks, which Jason, you always say, I don't use tracks, like,
right,
there's no way that I use tracks. But Chris and Ryan were able to actually speak into that in like very unique ways that they use tracks,
right,
how they view it, because their church is just, they're different,
right,
from their church.
Right, and very pastorally.
There,
which,
yes,
was, I think, one of the things that I really enjoyed about it most. Because,
yeah,
you know, with those guys, we're a lot of time head down doing the stuff, doing the lessons and that kind of thing. And so being able to really kind of hear their heart was really awesome.
Yes.
I can't wait to do the next one. I hope that if you are a Worship Artistry member, you will be there. If you did miss it, you should receive an email.
Yes, you will be able to rewatch.
Rewatch the whole thing. And all the good and badness.
It was not bad.
I say bumpiness.
Bumpiness.
It is hard. Like, can I just, for a second, before we get into our guest,
yes,
it is very hard to like sit on screen
see
a bunch of people, but like not really be able to we were kind of like, you know, people's mics are muted, and,
mm-hmm,
then you're trying to like navigate that. We're gonna get better at that. Like, I'm excited for the things that we're gonna do different. But man, when you see these people that just like sit in front of a camera and talk to people, like, when I'm in my studio, I'm doing the same thing, but I'm just talking to myself and I do that all the time.
Yep.
So that's just normal.
Or you do it on Zoom calls, but you do it with people that actually respond to you.
Right, right. And so like, but it was awesome. And we did get more response as time went on and we figured it out, but yeah, can't wait. Yes. Speaking of actually really conversing with people, we have an awesome guest today. Andrew Greer is, you might know him from many things. He has his own projects. He also has worked on a ton of projects. He talks a lot about collaboration in this, but the reason why I initially reached out to him was to discuss the Belzberg Sessions, which is by far my favorite music project to come out in the last couple months, cool. at least, which is basically a project where a number of artists, it's right about the 25th anniversary of Rich Mullen's death, and a bunch of artists came together and recorded his songs in his old house.
So cool.
And the thing that's amazing about it, you know, I know for me at least, like I loved Rich Mullins. I loved, you know, I kind of got on his train a little late with like Liturgy, Legacy, and a Ragamuffin Band, but it was really formative in the way that I view music and even how I understand God. Yeah. And but a lot of his music is, you know, is dated over time. You know, he was all through the 80s and 90s and and so even the stuff in the 90s, you go back and you're like, oh, I wouldn't do that now, you know?
Yeah.
But what they did is they kind of like stripped everything back to like real acoustic, just beautiful vocals. It's imperfect, but it's in being so, it is perfect. And Andrew was really kind of at the forefront of doing that, kind of really involved in the project. And then what ended up happening is he ends up being an incredibly wonderful person. And so
surprisingly.
No, that's not surprisingly. But no, it's like sometimes you do these interviews and you're like, I feel like I've known you forever.
Yep.
You know, and other ones you're like, feel like you're interviewing. And it took about like 2 seconds. Even in his emails, he was like, I really want to be able to like really help people with like my responses and that sort of thing. And so like, he's just an amazing guy. We kind of rabbit trail in a couple places, but there's so many like great,
gold nuggets.
Yeah. Like, yeah, just it's a pile of gold. There's just a pile of gold and he's a great human being. So without further ado, Andrew Greer. Andrew, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Well, I have to tell you, you have my heart already because, you know, as I was just telling you, I reached out to you because I was like, I'm in love with this Belzberg Sessions record. I want to talk to somebody, but from that, but then I started digging into kind of your whole span of work, which is quite the span. You've done a lot, but the thing that I fell in love with is you have these projects called Tune My Heart.
Yeah.
Which is so I used to have a podcast. It was like this little meditative worship podcast called The Tuning Room. And like the song that I wrote for it started out with the word, Lord, tune my heart to listen to you. And so like that phrase to me is just, it's so meaningful. It's just something that's always rolling around in there. So I saw you did that and I was like, well, I guess that song's not ever going to go anywhere. And also,
there's a lot.
And also, this is awesome. It's okay. I don't really make them to go anywhere. So.
Neither do I, and neither do they. You know, I think Tune My Heart. I think it's that's very meaningful that you have had any connection with those. Those were produced and developed, which I think this is a balance we're always trying to, or a tight line we're always trying to balance on, and that is of marketability, viability. You know, like, does anyone want to listen to it?
Right.
And if not, is it worth creating? And I would say it is worth creating regardless of who wants to listen to it. But we do have households and we do have families and we do have people that we're responsible for, including ourselves. And there is a way the world, we are currently in a bartering system. It's just the way it is. You know, that's how we get food and that's how we survive. And that's how we provide food for others if we're able and all that. So these projects were really built for a really certain retail structure that wanted this kind of meditative, contemplative kind of instrumental, but still we want vocalists and artists involved. And they knew I'm always doing Andrew and Friends. I don't know how not to collaborate. It's just always what felt most comfortable to me. I certainly have my own issues with pride and needing recognition and all that stuff. So it's not that I don't have any ego or that I'm most like Jesus compared to anyone else. It's just that I always felt most comfortable with my gift set in the context of either shepherding other people's gift sets alongside mine to create something broader, or even I love recognizing people's gift sets. Not that I'm the best discerner of that, but I like observing people. And my dad was a therapist and my mom was a classical organist. So it's the music with the, you know, it's like, it's all kind of meshed up in there. And I think it was a good blend to come from, because as a creative type, I am in need of plenty of therapy. And so I was not afraid of it, you know, but to my heart, the idea is that I really do think for me, you know, go beyond that those projects were created for a specific thing. And then they just happened to gain some traction. It happened to be, we're in a place in our culture where we're desiring so much, we're desiring more space from within, you know, like mm-hmm. creating space within and around our hearts and our spirits and our minds. And I think music can be a direct connector, or music can be that kind of stretcher of space within us. It can help boundary other things. It's just an align. It's an aligner. It's a aligner mm-hmm. of mind and spirit. And I've always thought music, if it hadn't been for music, you know, my connection with God, though I grew up going to church and I grew up with parents who have their own very devout individual relationships with God, walks of faith, they were not overbearing about that. And so they allowed my brothers and me to find our own path of faith. And music was the connector for me to God. I didn't really understand how to interpret scripture, really. Although I had an affection for some of it, I didn't have as a kid or even as a student some desire for the great academia of the Bible, you know? So I didn't totally know at that point as I was maturing how to apply it or how to take it. And then I didn't really know how to pray, you know? I mean, we had an example of prayer in our household growing up, in our churches growing up, but I thought it was always so interesting about prayer. It's not so much in my household, but in the church. It's like we were preaching to God when we prayed. Like, we're like, we know you will, or we know you have, instead of like, I always thought prayer was seeking God and saying, who are you? You know, and please don't leave me. Reveal yourself to me. You know, mm-hmm. today may I discover you somewhere, you know, mm-hmm. and that was always my prayer. And music does that better, I think. Music does a better job of not preaching, but of actually what are the thoughts going in our minds, and what are the circumstances going on through our lives, and pairing that up with, and here's centering my heart and mm-hmm. wanting to discover God. So I think that to my heart phrase, I'm glad you've used it. I'm glad I've used it. I'm glad people for centuries have used it. Right. It's a brilliant phrase just to say, I think it's in line with that seeking pattern. Not telling right. God who he is, but saying, who are you? And then align me,
right?
You know, with who you are.
Yeah, I've always loved that that idea of resonant or sympathetic frequencies, you know, where if guitars are in tune and they're sitting in a room and you pluck an E string on one, the E string on the other one will start to vibrate. Mm-hmm. And that's the picture that I've always had of that thing of like, I want to be so in line with God's heart, that when God's heart is vibrating for something, that I too recognize it and then can engage in it. And it's just such a cool thing. So I'd love to dig into this more. Yeah. So musically, because we're all musicians for a reason, mm-hmm. you know, there's a reason why I decided that like music is my vehicle for worship, you know, and I worship God in everything, right? Like my vocation is worship. You know, study is worship. My listening time is worship. My like everything, right? But music does something different to me, and I'm curious how that connected with you. When did you realize that music was like, man, this is how I see God in a way that I don't see him in other ways?
When it was kind of home base, or made to be home base.
Yeah.
I think probably at different times. The most significant time though would be, I grew up learning music. Again, my parents were both musical, but my mom was a musician. So she got us all into piano lessons, you know, by the time we could read, so she didn't have to read to us.
Did you want to do them, or did she make you do them?
Well, she did ask each of us to do it when we were in second grade. She did not. My mother is a really great, my parents are great people. They are not makers of, they do not make you do anything. Sometimes I had wished they had, you know, I was like, I wish you would have been a little more overbearing. Like that was probably
as a dad, I'm trying
decision.
To figure that out.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I was a father, I mean, I would be so controlling. but my parents were really good at, actually shepherding, which I think is to observe more than it is to dictate. And so she did ask us to. It did not take for either of my brothers very quickly. I think my mom was more annoyed with them than they were with her, but it just didn't work. And so, kind of to answer your question, she started me out, but then I just loved it. And I just started reading, and then she would just put more music in front of me. And I consumed it, you know, from the piano. And there was something about the activity of playing, you know, it was different than we grew up singing to and loving choirs and all that stuff. And I still love all that, but something about pressing our fingers into an instrument. And then even like a guitar, I think of the resonance of it up against my body. And then a piano, I think of just like the fullness of like my fingers pressing into the action, you know, which is why a piano is so much better than a keyboard, you know, because it there's something alive in it that resonates with you. But I think where music became most significant, though, I'd already gone to college for music and I knew music was my path, or at least it was always going to be kind of my compass, regardless of what creative endeavors I got into. I had a really tough relationship, end of a relationship, just a tough personal season experience, probably for the first time in my adult life, right after college. So I was 22 maybe. And my heart was just broken, and I really hadn't experienced a broken heart like that. And so I love the outdoors. I love nature. I also love the West, because I grew up kind of, going west of Fort Worth, which was kind of where the West opens up. And I've always loved the West. So I went to Wyoming for several months, maybe more than that, and lodged, centered out of a place, a lodge that kind of gave me an hourly job when I needed it and gave me a place to kind of lay my head. But then I would go backpacking around all the parts of it. Well, this modern lodge, which was right outside the east entrance of Yellowstone National Park. So a lot of tourists, a lot of travelers would stay there before they entered the park for however many days. But the lodge was built around Buffalo Bill Cooley's old historic lodge from the early 1900s that he had built, which is just so cool in general. But the lady that kind of did tours, it wasn't really open for tours. It was kind of like, if you knew about it, you could ask for the lady and she'd open it up or whatever. So I got to know Jean, and she was already in her 70s then, and we still communicate. She's in her late 80s, but there was a piano in there. And when I discovered that, I was like, wait a second, you know, it was literally in the middle of the Shoshone National Forest, this old lodge, not insulated. And I thought this piano is going to be a dumpster fire, you know, but the owner found out that I was a musician and kind of knew some of my journey and said, you know, here's a key. You can go play that anytime you want. And I went in there, and that old upright piano, which I thought it's not going to be playable, right? You know, it was perfectly in tune with itself.
That is a miracle. That is God's hand on your life. That's what that is.
It felt very much like some kind of love note, you know. And so I started writing songs, really. I had written songs in college and learned the art of co-writing and through some other Christian artists and started that writing experience, songwriting experience for myself. But I never really written for myself. I never written really particular to my experience. Maybe I just didn't have my experience yet. And I began writing their songs that really were me trying to understand God in the current circumstances I was in. And just with a heart that was very fractured. And I don't know, something about that was such a healing experience. Again, the act of playing, but then married with the act of journaling, which is songwriting, in this most beautiful place, but very, very lonely place for me at that time. I mean, I did kind of go isolate myself. But I found that I transitioned from isolation into solitude with God. And I really went out there with my back up against the wall, spiritually speaking and thinking. I like my parents, don't want to dictate things, but I just didn't understand anything. And I didn't really have any kind of understanding of who God was, mm-hmm. at least to me personally, what was a personal God. And so I just kind of went out there with that. I don't even know if it was a question, Jason. I just said, you are or you aren't, but I'd love to know if you are or you aren't, you know? And, and I think that piano was one gift. There were some beautiful gifts in nature too, but that he would, that I would have something at my fingertips that was so home for me in a place where, in a place where I felt in my heart not at home and in my mind not at home and my body not at home, and then literally was not, you know, at home. So that's where music took a root for me, started rooting in a way of connecting me directly with God. It's been a pipeline that was opened up. I felt like the Spirit opened up this pipeline, and it's that valve. I can't even find the valve to shut it off. I can't control it. It just won't stop, you know.
Man, you are just speaking all my love languages. This is just like, that sounds awesome. Can I go? I got to get there.
Were you there?
No. I did, you know, but like for me, nature is such a big part of the way that I relate to God and being in solitude. And I love your description of playing the piano. I was just in this last year, I went to Norway and I was teaching a YWAM school there and they had pianos everywhere. And I don't have a piano, and I'm a guitar player, and I've done some co-writing sessions with people that are on pianos, and you're like, that's so much stronger and less. Like, I sound like such a wimp with my acoustic guitar compared to you, you know? But it is just funny, like, how I came back, and I'm like, we need a piano. And my wife's like, we do not have room for a piano. I'm like, maybe if we could just move. She's like, we are not getting a piano. So we compromised, and I got a hammer-weighted keyboard. But you're right, it's not the same. It's not the same.
You can tell her. And I'd be, that's right. I don't care. Who is it?
Yeah, she's like, you need to make more money so we can move, and then you can have room for a piano. Like, and then I'm like, honey, I'm a musician. It's, you know, like,
yeah. That's right. Don't take it away from me. It's true. When you were saying earlier about like wanting your heart to resonate, like when God's heart beats, that yours resonates in proximity to it, you know, because of its proximity to it. There is something about acoustic music, which if you're talking about anything that's stringed, right, the pianos or the guitars or whatever, where it's like they're already, it's like the earth is already singing,
right?
Which I do think is our really touchness with nature too, you know. And when we talk about worship, like, because worship has become so genrefied, for better or for worse, I don't have a criticism about that, but because it is, one of its definitions is so closely related to a brand of music,
right?
That can get a little confusing for us in general. But all you gotta do is step outside, I feel like, to realign your mind, body, and spirit with what is the posture of, what is a posture of worship and what is worship. I feel like the original worship service, and people, well, I told you before we started recording, I don't care what people think, so I guess I should just say it. But I do care about people. But it is the first worship service. It is as if the trees and the stars, you know, and the breeze. I just think we're just a part. It's not that we aren't the crown of creation. It's not putting me on the same level as the trees or whatever, but we are a part of God's creation. There is a community in creation. Now there's a greater community, more significant community in people created in God's image directly, but there is a wider community in the earth. And I think music is an indicator of that. And then someone the other day was talking about the stars, and they did some research. Oh, as a songwriter when I was in a co-write, and they had done some research on the galaxies. And I like science, but I really more just like nature. I like the science of nature. I like just being out in it. I don't really love facts in general.
Well, you're a musician. So,
yeah. It's all a bit ambiguous. But the when he began to tap into how big stars are in relationship to the Earth and how many hundreds of million there are, and just even the space it would require to contain all those. I just think all that, and you're like, I don't have to think about how to worship.
Right.
In response to these things, I have no other response. You know, like it's too big and too good to just not be in awe. And I think awe, isn't that the you would know better than me, but I think that's like the originator of a posture, the original posture of worship is just being in awe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really beautiful. I know I have such a, I always tell people I love to feel small. I love to get in the woods and have the trees who have been here long before me tower over me, and the mountains, yes, and like these immovable objects that over millions of years are not immovable. They're moving all the time, but they seem so, like, to me, there's so many glimpses of God in nature, and it's so awesome to pull from that. And to, I love that picture of like joining in a worship service. That's, it's like, it's already happening. We just get to kind of be a part of it. It's
yeah. Really cool. And then it pulls up the other most awesome question, which, you know, straight from the Psalms is, who am I that you would be mindful of me, you know, right, in light of all of this. And when you talk about that smallness, and it's not about us being, I was talking with a friend over coffee this morning, right? It's not about, small is not a diminishing term. It's just a correct placement term, which in correct placement, I have all the confidence in the world because I understand who I am. I understand in relationship to God, you know? So it's like, I think it's the C.S. Lewis quote that's always quoted. And I kind of want to slap my hand for even quoting C.S. Lewis, but but it says, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking about yourself less. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the idea of small. You're not insignificant. You're just one part. You know?
Well, I think this conversation transitions us really well to the Bellsburg sessions, I think, because okay. I think, you know, you were a part of that project. You know, I know for myself, you know, Rich Mullins was such a and not even like all his work, like specifically, I remember getting Liturgy, Legacy and a Ragamuffin Band, and like that song, The Color Green, like grabbed me so hard, and like, And I fell in love with, it was like a soundtrack to nature, you know, and it was like this picture. And so tell me about the project that you just worked on, the Bellsburg sessions, and we could talk about as many projects as you want, cause you're going like crazy, but I definitely want to make sure that we hit this. Mm-hmm. Tell me about kind of the inspiration for this project.
So the record, you know, it's called Bellsburg, The Songs of Rich Mullins, and essentially it's a tribute record, right? And mm-hmm. and there have been tribute records to Rich. Now, it's been about 20 years, strangely, which he, you know, this fall marks the 25th anniversary of his death. And so every 5 years or so, there tends to be some synergy around Rich's music, Rich's life, some celebration of him in concert or in word or song. And I got kind of connected with the Rich legacy about 5 years ago. Well, it was 5 years ago, around the 20th anniversary of his passing. I authored a book called Winds of Heaven, Stuff of Earth, after, of course, his lyrics, the spiritual conversations inspired by the life and lyrics of Rich Mullins. And that book kind of cemented my placement in some of this sphere of artists and thinkers and people who love Rich, influenced by Rich, and are helping share his legacy with others. So we had been trying to figure out what a tribute record would look like around the 20th anniversary. In fact, Andrew Peterson, Jason Gray, myself, Andrew Osenga, Reed Arvin, Rich's former producer and producer of Liturgy Legacy Record, and Dave Trout, of who's at UTR Media and is just a great supporter of indie artists and real thoughtful music. We had come to the table all together and had something in motion. It just kept coming up against kind of dead ends. It wasn't harsh obstacles. It wasn't a bunch of no's. It just could not get the energy it needed to produce it. And we were going to do like a produced tribute record, like that's been done in the past, but just more with artists who've been influenced by him rather than ones who were always with him. And so it didn't happen. And then this guy named Chris Hoisington, who's a wonderful, he's part of a trio called the Brothers McClurg, mm-hmm. a great Americana folk outfit, was on Tegrity for a few years and now does their own thing and does it really beautifully. They have a independent record label called Old Bear Records out of Buffalo, New York. And they've fashioned such a cool niche out of reissuing old Christian music records that were not in the mainstream on vinyl. And they have a whole audience that looks for these from the 70s and the 80s. And it's crazy what they find, and it's incredible music. And so they're always looking for kind of those rarities and those gems. Well, they're my age. And so we grew up in the 90s with Rich Mullins music around, but they had never been that influenced by Chris and his brother Anthony directly, other than singing it in church or hearing it on the radio, until they were adults and they heard the B-sides of the Jesus record, right? Mm-hmm. And just to remind people, the Jesus record was Rich's last record that he had written. He was about to record right before he died. Various artists came along. There was a very produced CCM record with all those songs, but the B-side was Rich's demos, right? Just him at the piano or him with his guitar in the little church beside his house, pushing play and record at the same time on a cassette player.
Totally.
And, you know, that's what it was. And those became kind of the iconic, because it was Rich's last voice to us, you know? So that's what Chris fell in love with. And he wanted to, having that Old Bear influence of like rare kind of stuff and real stripped down kind of stuff, them being Americana folk, they really wanted to capture that kind of spirit of demos for a tribute record. He and I met and then got in relationship with each other musically and started talking about it, because I had all this history with trying to get it going. He had all this inspiration of how he wanted it to kind of be. And I loved that. I love Americana folk. I love field recordings. I love being in even some of my storyteller worlds. I just love the story that tells. Mm-hmm. So he had said, do you think we could get it done? You think we could record it actually at Rich's house? And I know Connie Hawk, who's the owner of Rich's house. Mm-hmm. Rich lived in a old house, maybe 120 years old or something now, 125 years old, just west of town in an unincorporated town called Bellsburg. And so here was his house, this old house. Connie's lived in it since before he died, when Rich kind of became nomadic and started living in teepees and was out in Wichita. And he had gone through his list of friends, his current friends, to see in Nashville who would want to maybe take care of the house or live in the house for him, you know, just someone live in it, just take care of it. Everyone said no, except Connie. and Connie's kind of a pioneer woman, and she is just a breath of fresh air, beautiful woman. And she said yes. And that was probably a few years before Rich died. Of course, he would come in and out and stay, you know, when he was in town. But then she's had it all these, so 30 years probably almost, and she bought it from the family when he died. So it still has a very rich, rich legacy in it, because Connie has been, since Rich bought it in 1980, whatever, I think Amy Grant is the one who said that Rich said it's the house that Sing Your Praise to the Lord bought, you know, like when he got when she cut Sing Your Praise, he could finally buy a house or have a down payment for a house. So anyway, I asked Connie, I said, what would you think if we brought in a few mics and brought in an engineer, and here in the living room on the creaky wood floors, you know, Chris and I are thinking this is the place to record it. Really, this was Chris's vision that I was helping implement. And she said, well, y'all are crazy, but you can do it if you want to, you know? And so we did it. We're crazy, you know? And over the course of about 2 years, Jason, because it took time, COVID kind of hit when we were first starting, and it's a small house, and so we had to take a breather. And then as we got back into it, we'd have about 2 or 3 days. The Old Bear guys would come from Buffalo. We'd get the artists together for that couple days of sessions. And we just enjoy a few hours with each artist and each song in that space that Rich embodied, where he wrote so many songs and where he had so many extroverted parties. He had a big birthday bashes out there on the lawn and the property, and music always happening. And Ashley Cleveland tells some of the best stories, because she was actually, she was the same era as Rich and was coming of age in music at the same time as Rich, and would bring her guitar and for all these parties and stuff. And she's such a storyteller anyway. And so the idea, you know, of doing it in the house and doing it in a stripped down way, the stripped down way was to mirror those Jesus record demos. And I think we have a hunch from people who were around him and who were working with him and who were his friends that his music was going to go in a decidedly unproduced direction. So a little bit was honoring the direction we perceive he was wanting to go. But the house is, there's just something about a home, especially for musicians, I think, that it's kind of a hallowed space, especially when someone dies too soon or they leave without having said everything they needed to say. Those four walls, I think, seem to contain some of the spirit of what was left unsaid. And so that's a little bit of why you get in there. That sounds a bit mystical, but I do think we are eternal beings and we're all connected, and we do bring our eternalness, our connectedness to God, our made in God's image, to live forever in communion with him. We bring that into our homes. That's why our homes are often it's the safe space. It's the oasis. It's where we have the table that everyone gathers around, because I think we're mirroring the life we were meant to live. And so we wanted to embody that with Rich. So that was the genesis, a very long answer to the genesis of Bellsburg, the songs of Rich Mullins. But then it became this double album, 18 songs, and everyone from people you would expect, like the Kevin Maxes and Amy Grants and Ashley Clevelands, to people like the Audrey Assads and the Derek Webbs and the Jason Grays, the newer generation, and of course, Brothers McClurg, and I got to be involved on it. And even people like Sarah Groves, who's been very highly influenced by Rich, but never been able to be on this kind of tribute record. And Andrew Peterson, whoever, but then like Steve Cudworth, who was the co-writer of If I Stand, Let Me Stand.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he and the guitar, and how can I forget David Mullins? David is Rich's brother that really, when asked to carry the legacy in a public space, does that. He looks like Rich. He has the disposition of Rich. He kind of sounds like Rich. So him singing in his brother's living room with his son, Rich's nephew, who was only 4 or 5 when Rich died, but Jonathan has said, who's now in his early 30s, how much Rich's life, his uncle's life, has been a part of the trajectory of his life, which isn't that cool. Mm-hmm. So David and Jonathan playing and singing Hard to Get, that lyric, literally saying to God, sometimes you're just hard to get. So this kind of cry from his brother's heart in his brother's space. I don't know. It felt so magical. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like we try to create these zones and we get in a studio and we do the best we can, but then you get to sometimes in your life embody a special space with the music. And I think, Jason, it's translated. We were tiptoeing around release because it's not refined. It's not slick. It's not tuned.
That's what's wonderful about it. That is what is wonderful about it. I mean, it's funny because it makes me mad because it's so raw and everybody is so talented that it still just sounds amazing. there's no, you can tell it's live. You can tell it's real, but it's like, that is what, I don't know. To me, that's like, as somebody who, when I was back in high school in the 90s, was like listening to Rich Mullins, but I mean, he was the first person that was a, celebrity or whatever that died that I actually cared. Like, I was like, wait, what? And it was like, there's like a grieving process that went on when I was in college and I'm sitting there going like, man, this is wild. I can't believe this. And, but I, same thing, like fell in love with the Jesus record, the demos and so there's just, he always had so much production around things, but those songs stand on their own so well. And so to hear you guys do them in a way that it's like, man, the song is just the song and it sounds amazing. And the people are so talented. I mean, it's incredible. I was so bummed because one of the kids that plays for me at church, he's like, oh, did you say they live streamed a concert? And I was like, what? Like, why didn't you call me like right when that happened? It's like, oh,
I think I can get you the link.
Oh my gosh. If it exists, I would die for it. I have looked everywhere and I cannot find it.
It is not anywhere. I can guarantee that. But yeah, I think it was through compassion. And so let me work on that.
Oh, you would be my hero. Well, you would be my hero.
If you may like it, you may not like it, but it is what it is, right? Live stream world.
Right. No, I think it's so cool. I I am so, you know, I live in worship world. This is where I work. You know, we teach all these songs. I'm also a worship pastor though. And I'm also a musician who loves to write and sing. And that is my language to God, you know? And, I'm so grateful when talented musicians take their talent and they put them towards projects that are heart projects that really resonate with my heart. That is like something that I'm so grateful for. And so every time, because I know how much work goes into producing anything. And so knowing how much you guys, like I look at that project and I'm like, this seems like a dream come true and also like a logistical nightmare. Like, and to have it come out so well and that you guys push through, I want to say thank you. Thank you for making it. Mm-hmm. It is a way to reach a whole new audience. And at the same time, for people like me, I think it's, you know, music can become work, right? Music can become something where you're just like, yeah, this is what I have to do. Got to crank out. I've done 600 lessons on worship artistry at this point, and I've got more to do this week, you know, and you're just kind of like, all right, let's do it again. But the things that inspire my heart is beautiful art around me and people more talented than me making beautiful things. So thank you for being obedient to that and pursuing it and actually making it what it is, because it is wonderful.
Well, you saying that alone does mean an incredible amount. That you recognize the logistical nightmare that can be a part of heart projects and passion projects, which is just true. And maybe makes them even more hearted, you know, when you push through hard logistics, hard practicals. But, you know, I am thrilled that there are obviously heartfelt people like you. When I hear you talking about it, I'm, you know, very grateful that it speaks, you know, in its own way. But in a way, you're the person who was in the room with us, you know, and it wasn't like I got to be in the room and no one else did, you know, or Chris got to be in the room and no one else did, or Amy got to be in the room and no one else did. It really was you in the room with us. And because that's the idea, is that I was like, how can the listener truly be in the room with us? And I think, you know, that's a part of, honestly, what's interesting, even though this is the furthest thing from a worship genre record, right? It's an artistic, you know, songwriter's record, really kind of songs that are wonderful, of riches. But that's what worship artistry, when you put artistry with worship, or the act of worshiping through the art of music. Mm-hmm. And so when you put the artistry in there, it's inviting, it's saying you were there with us, you are here with us, you know, and in the room with us, which is such the challenge, not to turn the tables, but of worship music and what you do, you know, but is, you know, I think somewhere maybe it was spoken to a lot of us, or maybe this is just part of human nature and the struggle of insecurity or whatever, that music was a self-serving art. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one time saying to a friend who works with I'm not sure the correct term, but mentally challenged, mentally disabled people, and she's just in the nitty-gritty of good work, hard work, you know, and definitely thankless work in some ways. And I said to her, I said, but look what you do. I mean, you've got your hands dirty in people's lives in such a good and grounding way. And you're making tangible differences. And I said, I just create something that gets put up on a shelf to glitter a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And she took the moment, thankfully, to correct me, you know, to say, well, yes, what I do is important. She said, but do you realize without what you create and others all throughout history, the willingness to submit yourself to the artistic process and to the giftings that you've been given and that you are continually refining, I don't know if I'd make it through a day of doing what I do. Like the partnership of art with hardness, with hard life, mm-hmm. with tough stuff. Like we all have to endure to a certain element in our humanity life. You know, it's not as it was intended to be. It's not as it will be in total. We get glimpses of it. We tap into it. We know it's true that this is good. We're just not fully good yet. You know what I mean? And the willingness and the ability for art to, I feel like it gives us the notion that it's true. It like affirms the notion that it's true, which in that way inspires people in whatever field they're in, whatever family they're in, whatever place of life they're in, to do good things, mm-hmm. you know, and even to some way, I think art inspires us to be good people. I think like, you know, it's like that thing we always talk about, like when you go to a huge concert and everyone's singing a song, no matter who it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe outside of Jason Aldean, I don't know, but anyway, but you know, you go and everyone's singing along and it's like all of a sudden, like we go back home and we get petty on Facebook, but we sat right beside someone we would have been petty on Facebook with and sang along, you know, like, so I just think, you know, for whoever is it your audience that is creating and doing the labor of creating or do the labor, the artistic labor of fashioning a service of worship to God for a community of believers or a record that is designed for inspiring, you know, the act of worshiping through music. It's just a valid and good and strong, you know, worthy effort in the art of like living, you know?
Yeah, that's it's so true. It's funny with, you know, it in church work, you know, and a lot of our people are, you know, they're either volunteers or they're worship pastors or whatever. And it's so easy to lose track of the grandness of what we're doing, right? And what that oftentimes turns into guilt. It's like, I should feel better, but man, it's a privilege. It's a privilege. I'm the worst for even being frustrated right now, or, you know, like whatever it is. And I do think, you know, I look at worship music, like we focus on congregational music. That's kind of our niche, right? And it's like, that is a, you know, you mentioned it, you're like, oh, it's kind of a genre. And it's like, I hate that because I'm like, it's true, but it doesn't have to be, you know, like it doesn't have to be. We could make worship music out of anything. It could be a thing, but it is always there to serve the, you know, the people around us. And I think it's really important to have other worshipful art in our lives that draws that out of us and helps us like go outside those boundaries. And because congregational music, it's a tool, like that's what it is. But most of us didn't start playing music because we were like, yes, I want to, this is what I want to play. Some people did, right?
But some like, people, yeah.
You know, I always tell the story about how like I fell in love with guitar listening to Dakota Motor Company. It was this like 90s surf rock, Christian surf rock band, right?
I totally
and
know. Yeah.
And I'm in my room and I'm listening to it. And I had taken piano lessons for 6 years because my parents wouldn't let me play anything else. And I was just like, there's no piano in this, learning guitar. And I went to my parents, you know, and ended up like, and everything I've ever done in worship ministry came out of that moment of falling in love with music and with the instrument. And it wasn't worship music, but it's like, but now I create worship music, you know, out of that, that's kind of where I live, but it's like not the only thing that's in my heart. And I think we really limit ourselves when we go like, let's just pick up the tools, you know, the really practical aspect, these tools in these songs, and just focus on those and not even like focus on like taking them beyond. It's like our hope with the website is always like, we want you to learn these songs really well so that you can be artistic with them. I was like, I know the artistry is probably going to get misspelled a lot when people try and type it in. It's hard to say sometimes, it's a weird word, but it's one of those that's just like, no, but that's that's the next step. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people take it and become artistic with it. And I think it's just important to like resonate with other artists that are doing, like, it's awesome. You get to lean into these things that don't necessarily have all those rules, and at the same time still speak very directly to the worshiper, you know? And so I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. I think, you know, artistry, being artistic with how we steward congregations in their musical worship, there's so much opportunity there. It's not always easy to teach. Some of it's instinctive or intuitive, or has to be challenged within ourselves. Two things from what you were just saying. One, yes, I think it's important for any of us who are in service to the church through music to be replenished by music we love. Because I won't always love what I'm leading, but it may be important that I lead that song, or that for the sake of the whole experience, or for even some of the artistic nature, you know, it is important for me to submit to what is best in that environment. But then it's also important for me to go home. And if for you, that's a record like Bellsburg that kind of strips it down. And I mean, there can be very worshipful aspects to a lot of music for the individual, for the time of personal worship, you know? And so I think one, it's very important to not forget to connect to music. And there will be some worship leaders who connect, they're replenished by an elevation worship record. And that's okay too. You know, that speaks to them. So I think one, it's important for us to always connect with music. Go to a live show of something you really love, a live concert. Go to a church service that does music in a way that you just love. And like I would always go to, when I had a period of time where I was more obligated to the church in a good way, musically, where I was not on the road as much and stuff like that, I would go to, on Sundays off or whatever, you know, I would go to some of my favorite Black churches, because the service of worship through music in those services just fills me up. Right. It also gives me some like kind of creative ideas. I can't embody all that, you know, but some of it I can. The way that they would transition between songs within songs, and then come, you know, start out with this song and then take a bridge from this song and then come back to the chorus of another song and then come full circle back to the first song. That creates such a flow of worship, and I'm so engaged and never disrupted in that engagement. And I thought, I can do that, even though we can't play all those licks, you know, and that kind of thing, and began to embody that, you know. So I think that's important. But the willingness to also, I think sometimes almost like a record label does with a buying audience, a worship leader or program can do with their congregation. Like, also, don't forget you're serving, that part of serving any audience is helping challenge them and encourage them in new ways, right? So I don't want to just give them what I perceive they want or what they said they want this Sunday. I want to be thoughtful and mindful of who is our church, who is the audience, who is the congregation. That's good stewardship of being a musician in any format. But I also want to say, but there's things in me that are a part of being a musical person, that's a part of my skill set, my gifting, my connection with God, that it is imperative that I steward in a way that's palatable for you. Because if you just knew what was inside, you'd go freak show. But if I think through it, craft it, make it excellent, I actually think you'll think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? So I just think, like, I think music, I think it's such a big job in a good way. People who are, I mean, I get to disappear, you know, I'm not accountable in my music to an audience largely. I mean, I am, but not on a day-to-day, week-to-week thing, you know, and I'm accountable to my congregation, but I don't do music for them, you know, so the person who shows up week after week and throughout the week, and I just think it's a really big, worthy job. And I think without music, a lot of people wouldn't go to church. So I think it helps buffer the elements that we need. Oh, and in the creative aspect, which you may not care about this and you didn't ask, but the way that we can build music also is such a great bed, right? It's such a great way to emote. And we don't want to control people's emotions, but we do want to inspire people's feelings in the context of congregational worship. So I think about even in elements of scripture reading, and I love seeing responsive reading coming back in modern settings, you know, and all that mm-hmm. stuff. So I think there's a lot of ways that musicians better than I've never seen a pastor who's good at programming a service. I just haven't. He knows how to do his part well, but he really is trusting of the musicians to mm-hmm. format the scripture reading. The almost the liturgy, even in a modern setting, is up to the musicians. And I think that is right, though. I think that is our responsibility, because there is a flow. There's a way of engaging people through a flow of something. And we're mm-hmm. thick, you know? So I think that, but also lastly, okay, and we can talk about it or end. But the songs, like, I'm a huge hymn lover. I'm a huge lover of the arc of the melody and the poetry of the lyrics. And that could, to some people, they could assume that that means I hate modern worship music. I don't at all. You know, that's a bad assumption. But I think the hymns have helped me be discerning mm-hmm. in what are good songs, you know, or to me, or my interpretation, but to always remain open if you're more on that side of loving the hymns, the liturgy, or whatever, just to remain open. Like it helped that C.C. Winans was leading, because that makes
it doesn't hurt
better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like, is that you, God? But anyway, and she was leading that. I think it's a Cody Carnes. I think he wrote it, but it's he won't.
Oh, yeah.
He
won't
fail.
The song was so hard to teach because it's so hard to name the chord chart. You're like, this is pre-chorus, refrain, chorus. I don't know. This chorus number 5. Our teachers all did it differently. And I'm like, you're like trying to untangle it. Like, you're calling it a chorus. You're calling it a bridge. You're calling it a refrain. But anyway.
I call it a call out song. Like, when you hear me go, he won't. He won't.
Yeah. Just follow me.
Yeah, exactly. But I was in that service and I kind of didn't love the song when I first heard it. I don't know what version I heard. I don't remember. And but I was just like, whatever. And then being in a genuine congregational experience, you know, and what's the lyric right before, depending on what you're coming from into. But anyway, whatever it is that comes right before that.
Sure.
And then when everyone's singing together, he won't fail.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just impossible not to engage. So without me being open, or with me always having a preconceived idea of what is good and what is not good, closes the doors to things that in certain contexts or in the right moment or for the right Sunday or whatever is exactly right, mm-hmm. you know? And so just being open to the community of songs, you know, I think has been important in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, I feel like I could talk to you for like 10 hours. Can we just hang out sometime? Cause that would be a blast. This is so great. And I don't want to take any more of your time, but I'm so thank you for what you do. Thank you for, you know, inspiring the work of arts. I'll just quickly ask you, like, what's next? What's got you inspired now? What's pulling your heart?
Yeah, it's film for sure. It's not directly related to music. Although since this is during the first like 6 or 8 weeks of pandemic life, our church, the church I go to, is much like all other churches, you know, but it's a smaller church. So finding live stream for the first time and finding out how to do that in an engaging way when we don't have some big demonstrative, we didn't already have it prepared for that. And so they asked me if I would write a song each week to mm-hmm. that I recorded beforehand or filmed, whatever. And it was part of the service. And basically it was just kind of that, some scripture and the teaching. And I said, sure. I mean, it's like me as a musician, that's how I could offer my help in that time. I don't know anything about medicine. I don't know anything about, you know, respiratory diseases. I don't know anything mm-hmm. of that, you know, but I do know music. And so I tried to write what we were feeling from my interpretation. Finally, I for the first time, Jason, in a long time, I enjoyed the writing process. I think because we had space for it, you know, we had time for it. And then two, I was like, I think I like these. I don't typically love my songs. I mean, I totally think they're valuable and they have a purpose and people cut them and that's great. But I don't always like, oh yeah, that's fine.
You know everything. You know everything that's wrong with it, right? Like it's just the, like,
yeah, wrong with it, and just kind of like, well, that's not how I would do it, but that's how they want it. So you know, kind of thing. I'm a very practical person when it comes to it. So I'm like, if that, you know, I like music to live. So I'm not so proud that I won't change something, but these were just for me, my interpretation, and then for a body of people I feel very personal to. So it felt like family. So anyway, all that to say, so being more music related, I have a project coming out, a record that's been a long time since I've done kind of an Andrew Greer project. That's especially of my songs, called Songs from the Dark, that comes out in March. And I'm very excited about it because I have zero expectations for it from how people receive it or commercial viability, or it just feels good to have done mm-hmm. it and to sing songs that mean something to me, to put them on tape for this point in time. And it also feels really good that no one cares. Yeah. You know, like whoever will
That's
care,
freeing,
will care.
Right.
Oh, it's huge. I would say, as my last encouragement to all us musicians, also as able, find the space to make music that doesn't have any set expectations. So yeah. That's not for your congregation. It's not for your next project you have to do. It's not for a class. It's not for whatever. It's just for you, and maybe for a small intended purpose, and then let it just live. So anyway, that Songs from the Dark project, I am excited about.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to hear it. Andrew, thank you so much. This was such a life-giving conversation. I'm going to have to harass you and get you back at some point. And I got to get
Please
that
do.
Link. I got to get you that link. Gotta get that link.
I got some things to follow up with you about. Yeah.
Awesome. Yes. It's kind of like, you know, I'm going to put it in this way where it's like, you know, oh, I left something at your house. I guess I'm going to have to come over and pick it up. And, let's hang out for a little bit.
I like you. Yeah.
Awesome.
We can do
Well,
that.
Thank you.
I'm looking
thank
forward
Thank you so
to that.
Much.
Okay. Now here is one more thing about Andrew Greer that I want to talk about.
That makes him the realest deal.
Yeah. The realest deal. So you heard us in the interview, he was talking about, I said how, oh man, you'd be my hero if you could find that streaming concert, cause I'd love to watch it. Not only did he find it like almost immediately and email me the link, he also then knew I was watching it that night and was like texting me, like conversing. It was almost like a live watch kind of thing. And we were just like talking back and forth. And then, as if that wasn't enough, a package arrives in the mail a few days later that has like some of the unreleased work tapes and stuff from Rich Mullins that are going to be coming out here in the future, with a handwritten note, like a piece of paper with writing, which is this kind note. And I'm just like,
that is what a handwritten note is.
Who does that? You know what I mean? Like that, I feel like that is such a picture of like his thoughtfulness and intentionality as a person.
Did you feel special?
I think he makes everybody feel special. That's what I think is amazing about him.
That's incredible.
But I think he is a pretty special person in that. And so, check out the Bellsberg sessions. We're actually going to follow this up. We have another interview with somebody who was involved in those sessions as well, coming from like a really different perspective, but I can't encourage you enough to go listen to this album. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, all the places. It's called the Bellsberg Sessions. It actually includes a bunch of people who have been on our podcast over time. Andrew Osenga is on there. Obviously Andrew Greer. There's a song called Sparrow that Andrew does with a couple other singers. And it is just, it is chef's kiss. It is just beautiful.
When Jason mentioned that we were going to have, he mentioned Andrew Greer, and then he started talking about the Bellsberg Sessions. I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I have no idea what this world is. I don't know anything about this. And I started to dive into listening to Rich Mullins.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
He was a great writer.
Yes. There was, so I know, I can't remember off the top of my head now, that there is like one more, like a song that's more popular. I think that was more, maybe I'm exact. I don't know.
There was a lot,
but there was one song that I was already familiar with and I did not know that it was Rich Mullins. And then
was it Awesome God?
Probably. Because oh, that's... that would make so much sense. Yes. That was the song.
That one cracks me up. Cause it's like the most not Rich Mullins song from the standpoint of like how I came to his music.
Yes. But I,
but that's what people know.
But after listening through that and then listening to the Bellsburg sessions, I actually last night, the song that was stuck in my head was Hold Me Jesus.
Oh,
such a good song. Wow.
The only thing that makes me sad is they didn't do the song Peace, which is like off the Liturgy and Legacy and Ragamuffin Band album. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm just going to record it for myself just so
I have it.
Yeah. Just so I have it. I mean, it's amazing the way Rich does it, but it's one of those really beautiful songs I've done at weddings. It's all about communion. Mm. It's just, I don't know. It's a really beautiful song.
So listen to that. I haven't gotten too deep into the listening archives, but I should.
Yeah. There's some really great stuff. He's just a great writer. He really was a great writer and just a very interesting person. There's actually a movie called Ragamuffin, which you can see for free. It was on Netflix, but I think now it's just like on YouTube or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just a fascinating glimpse into his life. They did a really nice job of telling what I think is probably a really true story. Mm-hmm. So they didn't like put too much gloss on it. You know, sometimes we take our heroes and we're like, oh, they were super rad. Like, no, he'd struggle with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But like what a powerful life he led as well. So.
That's awesome.
So yeah, check that out too, Ragamuffin. And check out our next podcast where we'll be talking to Chris Hoisington, who is the one that you heard me and Andrew talking about him and kind of what he brought to it and kind of looking at it from a studio standpoint and a recording standpoint and the challenges that come with that. I mean, they all just recorded it like around microphones in a house, like live. So, and it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So be sure to check that as well.
Yeah. And as always, be sure to go to worshipartistry.com and start a free trial. Go learn songs. We have a lot of newer worship songs coming out from the ones that you're probably listening to and that your band wants to do. So be sure to go to worshipartistry.com and start a free trial. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.